So the koan I'd like to share tonight is not the one that I originally chose, but has jumped out at me, as some things do, sort of catch you by surprise, and I remembered. And let me read it. It's one that one of the first koan that for me personally came alive. I'd heard many of these stories and always had some appreciation, but this one was one that for me touched me in such a deep place, suggested some possibility for living that had not occurred to me. It's case 11 from The Gateless Barrier. Jiaozhou and the Hermits. Jiaozhou went to a hermit's cottage and asked, "Anybody in? Anybody in?" The hermit lifted up his fist. Jiaozhou said, "The water is too shallow for a ship to anchor," and he left. Again he went to a hermit's cottage and asked, "Anybody in? Anybody in?" This hermit too lifted up his fist. Jiaozhou said, "Freely you give, freely you take away. Freely you kill, freely you give life." And he made a full bow. Wu Men's comment: both held up their fists in the same way. Why did Jiaozhou approve one and not the other? Tell me, what is the core of the complication? If you can give a turning word on this matter, you will realize that Jiaozhou's tongue has no bone in it. He is free, now to raise up, now to thrust down. Be that as it may, can you realize also that Jiaozhou was seen through by the two hermits? Furthermore, if you say that one hermit was superior to the other, you do not yet have the eye of reflective study. And if you say there is no difference between them, you do not yet have the eye of reflective study. Wu Men's verse: eye like a shooting star, activity like lightning. The sword that kills, the sword that gives life. And to the two hermits, to complicate the matter even more, I'd like to read a brief passage about a third hermit throughout this Ango. Melissa and I have been checking email and doing temple business, and have received news for me that we've mentioned first of my old Dharma friend who committed suicide last August, and then news from Devin and David of the birth of their son. And also I've received some emails from another Dharma sister down in Tallahassee. My teacher George and I lead retreats down there. We do a week-long retreat together, and it's at Jan's house. Jan's mother lives in the house next door, and Jan has been caring for her, and her mother is very close to death. And just this evening, I received this email from Jan. Mom's hospice nurse came by today and said that Mom's remaining time is short. Mom has quit using her hearing aid. When she read that's what the nurse thought, she gave one of those celebratory fists of approval. Yes. My friend Bobby came by in the afternoon and agrees that Mom could die most any time now, though she can barely stay awake or speak. She spent time looking at her calendar. She asked me when she started her fast, and we determined that it was on Monday, February 24th, 2 weeks ago in a day. She expressed surprise that it had not taken as long as she had expected to get to this point, and she was quite pleased. Did not take as long as she expected to get to this point. True for all of us here. In an instant, here we are. All of us trying to accomplish our way. All of us born into this a mystery beyond comprehension. We don't know where we come from and we don't know where we go. Continually trying to be ourselves, to find some genuine way to move through this life, some genuine way to enter into the moment. And so these three hermits raising their fist, of course, Jan's mom was actually quite a social woman, quite engaged, did many things, but when we started our Ango a few days later, she began her fast, deciding it is time for her to make her exit. What does this raising the fist mean? How do we manifest ourselves? In the koan case, Jiaozhou is the one who's doing the checking. And for us, maybe sometimes upstairs in the Doksan room, the teacher doing the checking. But ultimately, of course, it's our life that checks us. Our life that appears in front of us in the form of our bowl of delicious stew in the evening, or our irritated friend, or a child, or parent, or boss, appears to us in the feeling of the warm sun on our skin when we walk outside in this warm day. We are checked when things don't go our way. When everything is going according to our plan, we may have a high opinion of ourselves, a high opinion of the situation. But then something happens. The state we are in never stays. And this includes moments of great realization. We've been talking on and off again about awakening and about the possibility of awakening to our life. And all of us have some idea of what this awakening might be. And again, we're told that we don't know, we can't imagine. And that it is not something that comes and can be grasped or held on to. We've been talking about the great joy of this Ango of the coming and going. The coming and going of the days, the coming and going of people in residence, the coming and going of people in the evening and in the morning. Oftentimes when we practice this intensively, we batten down the hatches. We pull the hatch door down and we dive down deep, and not many people come in or many people leave. But this has been an intensive practice period, embracing the coming and going. And embracing, of course, this great coming and going, the mystery of little Leo being born, the mystery of a dear Dharma colleague taking his life, and now the mystery of Jan's mother lying in bed, almost no energy, but when getting the news that the end is near, she raises her fist. For all of us here at Ango, the end is near. Can see the finish line from here. Maybe the horse wants to race toward the barn. Mixed feelings. Maybe horse wants to turn and run the other way. I don't want it to end. I don't want it to end. On the deepest level, our opinion makes no difference. This moment, always here, always reliable, and the form of it always changing. We are all sparkles on the surface of water. Flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering lamp, quite a mystery. And these hermits, when being examined by the boss, maybe he was making his rounds, these hermits were quite the thing in China, of people who had done intensive practice and were refining their practice up in the mountains. These little hermitages, just a little open room. And Zhao Zhou goes in and inquires about what is already in plain sight. Anybody in? Anybody in? And these two hermits, it's actually not clear in the original text whether it's two hermits or the same one he comes back to. But they both raise their fists. They, in the great Zen tradition, don't give him an explanation. They don't say, well, can't you see I'm sitting here? What's wrong with you? But they raise their fist as some kind of expression or demonstration. Now, each one of us is always, all the time, demonstrating ourselves perfectly. Although we may think that we are hiding some of ourself and exposing only the parts we would like others to see. In every gesture we make, every move, in our walk, in our sitting, we are totally being ourself. And so even as we all sit in a posture that's roughly similar, sitting on the chair, sitting on the cushion, upright and dignified. Each one of us revealing ourselves. And I think the goal of our practice is to be present, to willingly reveal ourself. And not just to reveal ourself, but somehow to stand by ourself, to stand in our own shoes. All of us have been taught to check out how we're doing. A wonderful thing to be sensitive to the opinion of others. A wonderful thing to receive feedback, to learn and grow. But also something more than that. If we take feedback as the only truth and then we try to conform first to this person's opinion of us, then to that person's opinion of us. And then we find out that what we thought that person wanted us to do, they didn't quite want us to do it like that, but like some other way. And all of us can so easily get tied up in knots. And again, a wonderful thing to care about other people, and to part of our work together here as Sangha is to learn how to function together, how to respect one another, how to hear opinions, how to come to something more than just our individual opinion. And yet, this is not separate from truly being ourself. I think so often it appears as an either or. Either I will be myself or I will be cooperative. If I am in a relationship, it means I have to give up who I am. I think we're exploring here some deeper kind of harmony. This inexpressible harmony of Sangha that is a harmony that includes both discord and conflict and confluence and alignment. And the possibility that as each one of us learns to be ourself more authentically, that we actually can find a way to be together in some new way. That we come together as a community not to serve the community as opposed to ourselves, but this community exists so that each one of us can do this most precious work, this community, this temple, a place of beauty and practice, where each one of us can learn to be who we already are. And so as we practice, wonderful to meet with teachers and to receive instruction. And also so important to stay true to our experience of the moment. When I was about to go out to a retreat with a quite old and renowned and troubled Zen teacher, my teacher, George's teacher, Sasaki Roshi, I was quite nervous because I had sat with him before, and it's quite rigorous, and interviews last between 5 seconds and 30 seconds, and he's not so interested in hearing about how you're doing, but wants you to demonstrate your total heart. Quite a challenge. But I had a dream that he was ill, and that I had visited him in the hospital, and that he had put his hand on my head and given me his blessing. And I reported this to my teacher, George, thinking this was a good omen. And George says, "You don't need someone else's blessing. You don't need someone else's approval." I was shocked. But of course, that's to the point. The point in meeting with a Zen teacher is not about getting their approval. It's not about figuring out the answer that they are looking for, but about coming as yourself and meeting in this space of genuineness. And it doesn't matter the content of what is true. It can be difficulty and upset. It can be clarity and spaciousness. But it is necessary in this practice to believe in ourself, to really believe as we sit on the cushion that there is nothing to be done. And we march on into our life, into our life and death, as Jan's mom. What an exemplar for us all, and all of us called to raise our fist as best we can, presenting ourselves as we are, moment after moment. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably. And invite questions, comments. Well, so as you move through your life, are you the same person or different people?
I'm different.
Different. Are you sure about that?
Well, me in the morning is a little different from me in the before coffee and after coffee.
Great, thanks, John.
Well, and that's what Wu Men is really trying to prevent us from landing on either side. You know, just, are you the same? Are you different? And if you say yep to one of those, you're missing the other side. So it's wonderful that there's so many layers in this koan. Because, you know, Jiao Zhou is not the same person both times either, and he is still Jiajia. And you can feel your mind go, wah, 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 but that's good.
I really like the idea of the hermit, you know, showing up and then, you know, doing the fist pump into the air. That's really cool. Like, even that back in the ancient days, too.
Yeah, right, I know. I was thinking about that. The guys down in Mexico, right?
That's where it came from.
Yeah, that's right. They were Buddhists. Doesn't say anything about wearing a glove or anything on it. Yeah. Yeah, interesting, that gesture. I mean, there are human gestures of then something about raising the fist in the air that not a small thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, Jason.
So that just brings me to, well, what did it mean for that particular monk or those particular monks? Mm-hmm. And did it mean anything to them? You know, we are taking it from our perspective. I am. You know, I heard that too.
Yeah.
It, you know, but, you know, was that what was... where the monk was at, or was he just, did he just do that?
We, you know, this whole comment's been about koans. And one of the things about koans is that we have to get inside the characters. Mm. We have to feel that fist bump from inside. Yeah, right. And that's how the meaning of it. It doesn't matter that it happened 1,500 years ago. That's almost irrelevant. But there's this humanness that we can get inside of. What is going on here? And if you just try to speculate or go from the outside, it's going to take you far away. But if you say, what is this? You know, really, what is this? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is this? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, my take on this koan, you know, from maybe the hermit perspective is, I don't get the sense that they're sitting around waiting for a job. You know, it's like, well, is today the day that he's
going to come and check?
So, you know, for me, it feels like it was just, it was meeting that moment. You know, somebody comes in. Anybody here? Yeah. And, you know, so, not necessarily, you know, needing anything, you know.
Right.
You know.
Right.
It was just like bowing or saying hello or whatever. You know? I mean, they just met that moment.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
It's just, that possibility of, you know, it not needing his approval, you know. I just don't see them as just sitting there, waiting for him.
Looking out the window. Yeah. Is he coming? Get back in there.
Well, and this is the thing, too, right? It doesn't matter what really happened in one level, but this is a reflection of you. This is you as the hermit. Or both hermits, and Jiajia too. Like, you know, that's very important to know that about yourself. You're not just sitting around waiting for approval.
Yeah.
Or are you?
Yeah, I know what that feels like.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and this is the possibility of
right.
of being free of it, and you can really feel that.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny that. Sort of every breath is the same, and every breath is unique from breath to breath. And also that it's a thing that I certainly work on remembering. And it's very funny that I look to approval for that. It's very common. Because it's also a really big indulgence. It's like you're eating a cake all the time. It's like you're seeing cake, and how would you not be like, oh man, cake, this is great. Constant cake.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the invitation, that we are being given the most precious gift that is totally incomparable, immeasurable, and yet we spend most of our time measuring it and comparing it and wondering if it's good enough. And I think when we get this taste that you're talking about, then there's no need to try not to compare. Because if you try not to compare, then you're lost in that. You know, then it's waiting. So I hope the teacher comes today so I can show that I don't care what he thinks. Right, but you know, I think those monks had those hermits had other had bigger fish to fry than whether they checked out or not. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. And I'm just so captivated by your friend's mom with the same gesture, you know. Yeah, and there's something about. You know, being willing to be authentic or being just being authentic and as an expression of appreciating the preciousness of our life, you know, that it is so very brief. And when we really appreciate that, it's like a permission to, you know, like really live, you know, not some imitation living. And she just, you know, just seeing her...
accomplishing.
So.
Well, I love tying this into appreciation that sometimes I know for my teacher, I feel such gratitude and I wonder how can I ever repay him? And I realize the way we repay our gratitude is by being ourselves. Like you're saying, I mean, if you're really grateful for the preciousness of this opportunity, then we actually express our gratitude by being who we are. Yeah.
Not so easy. If you try to express your gratitude by showing up and being who you are, so there's often a false layer.
Yeah.
I'll do this. And this is really a dropping away of all of that. And just really showing up as yourself, you can't make that happen. You're actually doing it all the time.
Right.
Silly sin students.
I think it's true that there's a false layer. I mean, there's a certain person that comes into my life to visit, but when she does, it's just like I'm putting on this, aren't I doing a great job, you know, don't you approve of how I'm doing the things, and when I try to explain myself and who I am to her, I don't get much feedback, and I think, you know, I'm just trying to realize that she's somebody that doesn't necessarily, she's not wired the same as I am, and she doesn't function the same way I do, and looking for compassion or empathy from her is kind of an endless pursuit because she doesn't know how to show it. She's a problem solver. Mm-hmm. She can't fix it and she has nothing to say. But I'm still asking for understanding and something. But I try to switch it around and be like, I understand you. This is how you work. Mm-hmm. This is how you are. So... you know, you don't have to change that. I'll just try to be myself.
Yeah.
It's just endless frustration.
Right, and what I appreciate what you're saying is we can begin to see that. Mm-hmm. That and begin to see that trying to get this person or indeed, you know, any particular other person to approve of us is probably not a strategy that's going to make us happy.
Yeah.
But we have to see that. You know, enough times, and then we can say, all right, what are my choices here? Well, I can try harder.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do that for a little bit, but then at some point we say, it's not going to happen. So, and there's some freedom in realizing that you will never be able to get that person to do what you want them to do.
Right. And vice versa, she's not going to get me to do what she wants me to do. And, you know, I have a good ally who knows her as well. We've kind of connected over the fact that we both feel the same frustration, and it was like, oh, I'm not crazy. You know?
Yeah.
So we discussed her in the sense that we're trying to figure out how best to interact with her so that we don't end up hurting ourselves, and you know, it's just.
But from the point of view of Zen practice, there's you can do all these kinds of, you know, learn how to be present to people and all of that. Mm-hmm. But we're really interested in what the experience is of the frustration,
yeah,
and what the experience is of not being met. And just knowing what that for yourself, without any,
yeah,
it doesn't matter what happens.
No.
So this is what, you know, we'd encourage, that kind of curiosity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your experience, period.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, thank you.
Your story, not the story, well, but yeah, you're telling about your friend's mom's transition right now. My mind rarely ever goes this way, but I was out today running, listening to the music, and a sad song came on, and it reminded me of somebody who I'm very close with, and the thought of losing, of having something bad happen to her. And the song just came up, and these thoughts and feelings came up. And it was really sad. And, you know, I was trying to do exactly like you were just saying, Melissa. You know, what is that experience? What is this experience and feeling that?
Mm-hmm.
And the thoughts and the feelings. And all sparked by that song.
Yeah.
You know?
It's really extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. How the associative the mind is.
Mm-hmm. And then hearing... Sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Hearing the emotion in your voice.
That's nice. Yeah. Okay. That we all sparked from your emotion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the same way.
And we sparked, yeah.
Yeah.
And the thoughts of that re-coming.
Yeah. And it's always so surprising. I mean, I got this email and I thought, wow, that's really touching, and then I start to read it, and sort of this welling up of my mom and other people we know who are sick, and the preciousness of this, and so then there it is.
Yeah, the preciousness of it.
Yeah.
You know, the lightning bolt, the
right,
flash of a match. The,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, that associative quality, you know, is so useful in practice, too. It's one reason we all come together to sit, because we get to experience, you know, one person starts to open the door to that kind of curiosity and freshness and what is this, and we all start doing it together, and that can happen verbally in the Dharma dialogue, or it can happen non-verbally when we're sitting together.
Yeah.
It's really quite precious.
Yeah.
So we can go all kinds of routes into conflict and difficulties, into sadness and grief, and into being present to the wonder of awakened nature, which includes those other two things.
Yeah, it's the whole catastrophe.
Yeah.
So let's continue to associate in silence.